San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from the Lirac Estate and the Very Good Night Dinner tonight. We're not in studio with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, down to Cabo, out to the desert. And if you have an app for AM 760 KFMB, you can hear us there, or we're stream live at 760kfmb.com. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's an accomplished marathon runner. He is a best-selling author, and he's a family office expert advising several high-net-worth families. Richard, how are you tonight?
I am marvelous. Having a fun time here at the estate.
Richard Muzio. So get that mic right up to your mouth there, Richard, so we can hear you.
It's about as close as you can get without eating it for dinner.
Yeah, there you go. Well, there's plenty of good food, so don't do that.
This doesn't taste as good as what's out there.
But anyway, I just want to thank the guys down at Tire Depot at 32nd and Adams. They helped me out. There was a real jam the other day, and they beat any tire price in town. So if you need to get some good tires, go over and see Ray at Tire Depot. And Richard, you wanted to mention Business Journal, right?
San Diego Business Journal this week. I'm on page 17, so that's a collector's item. Make sure you get it before they're all sold out. Richard Muzio, page 17, San Diego Business Journal.
Nice Q&A. But anyway, tonight, we're here for the second time, but it's actually the fifth annual Very Good Night Dinner. It's the best foodie event in town, and bevy event for that matter, but always hosted by the wonderful, delectable, and discriminating Michelle Ciccarelli-Lirac, who is with us tonight. So welcome, Michelle.
It's good to have you back, Richard and Joe. I can't believe
it's been a whole year.
So, and I just want to give a shout out to the fact that you won an award for the broadcast that you did here last year.
Thank you, ma'am. So, yes, three first place press club awards, and they're all on our website, iymoney.com. You can read all about it. But this is your fifth annual. We have another guest with us tonight in this segment, but we'll get to Kurt in a moment. But
he's just a nationally published author. Yeah. Who am I?
Yeah. But why don't you set the table for us, Michelle, and
so
tell us what it's all about.
Yes. Yeah, she's already set the table for 220 people. But
out in the backyard.
One more
here.
Time.
So this was just a small gathering of people that has grown to be about 220 guests.
People and animals.
That's right. And about another 15 goats and cows and pigs.
Not to mention your collection.
Yeah, that's right. So, what we did was we wanted to bring together all of the people in our community who are involved in the sustainable food movement. And that's chefs and ranchers and farmers and activists and writers. And, something that people probably don't know about San Diego is our county is that we have the highest number of family farms anywhere in the state, the highest number of organic farms anywhere in the state. People just don't know this about us. It's all right here. We have the best of everything.
Thousands of farms we're talking, right?
Fantastic. Well, yeah. I don't know about thousands. I don't know the exact number. You have to ask your next guest.
I think Andrew Spurgeon. We'll look that up. But anyway.
But you know what? It's all right here. And I wanted to bring everyone together and think about how can we promote this? How can we let everyone in our community know what's right here in our backyard? And it's a benefit to all of us. We get the freshest produce, the best milk, the best meat, and we don't, this is what we want to promote. This is what we want to encourage, because these are our friends, our neighbors, and they put out the best products. So that's like a win-win-win.
And Michelle, why does local food taste better?
Wow. Well, a lot
because
of
it
reasons.
Does.
It does, in fact, taste better. Well, first of all, I think the most obvious example is a tomato, right? Mm-hmm. There's the tomato that you get that comes in those shrink-back packages that can live in your refrigerator for, months, right? And that thing is, a hard skin and a ton of seeds. And then you get that heirloom that's all gnarly on the outside, and it's in funky colors and almost like a weird pumpkin. Uh-huh. And then inside, it's like no seeds. It's all flesh. It's so flavorful, right? That's the thing. Because big business, look, they've got a different job to do. They got to make food that's going to go across the country and around the globe. So they breed it for a different reason, for longevity, for stability, et cetera, et cetera. But local farmers, right, their food is picked fresh. Like you go to the farmer's market, the possibility that was picked that very day. You know your farmer, you can go pick it yourself. So you're talking about fresher, greater varieties, and they're bred for a different reason, for taste and for variety, not for longevity, right? That's a big difference.
I've noticed I bought some apples and they're like ripe forever. I mean, they know.
That's not a good sign. Okay, look, let me just give you my one tip. Okay, I'm not an expert, but if your produce lasts forever, it's probably not the one you want to eat. But let's ask Kurt because he's an actual farmer.
our other guest is Kurt Timmermeister.
You're supposed to put that in a bowl on the coffee table, Joe, as a decoration.
Was it wax?
Yes. Yeah. But Kurt is also here, Kurt Timmermeister. He's of Kurtwood Farms. He's all the way here from Seattle. He's a noted author. Two of his books, Growing a Farm and Growing a Feast. His website is kurtwoodfarms.com. That's Kurt with a U. But welcome, Kurt. How are you tonight?
I'm excellent. I'm at the most fabulous party I've been at in years.
Isn't this great?
This is extraordinary.
Is this your first time here?
This is my first time here. Cool. First time in San Diego.
Wait, the best part is that he's our honored guest. He came in last night, and this morning we put him to work in the kitchen peeling beets.
I had to. I love being in a kitchen. I want to work with food. And I couldn't sit around all day.
But you've got a fascinating story. You were a restaurateur in Seattle for how many years, and then your whole life changed, right?
I had a restaurant for 18, 19 years in Seattle, and I got to where I couldn't eat the food in my own restaurant. I just didn't like it. I was buying commercial food. Mm-hmm. And it's a bad sign when you're not eating in your own restaurant and your staff starts to notice that you're not doing it. So I, instead of changing, which was formidable to try and change a large restaurant, I sold it. Bought a farm, uh-huh. And now I raise Jersey cows and make cheese 7 days a week, and I love it, and it's a great passion.
Did you write the books first before you got the farm, or after you got the farm?
After,
wow.
After 10 years of trial and error, and I like talking about failure more than about success. I like saying these are the things that actually went wrong, and I'm still talking about it, and I still love it, and. Things, it's hard. It's a tough business, no question.
Yeah.
And you can get through it and still make fabulous food.
So you started out with how many acres, and what is it up to now?
I started with 4, and now I have 13 acres, which is still, by national standards, a small farm. But we use every inch of it.
So name your livestock. You have goats, sheep. What do you have?
Jersey cows, almost exclusively. Originally, we started with this kind of old McDonald's farm, kind of two sheep, two cows, two pigs, and so on. And it doesn't work. You have to kind of pare down. I realize I really love cows. Uh-huh. I'm good at it. The land is suited for it. And that we were very, very good at making cheese. We still keep pigs. We keep 2-3 pigs a year, Tamworth usually, to eat up bad cheese when we make mistakes. Mm-hmm. We feed them lots of whey from the...
That's the best part.
That's
there's
best
no
part.
Waste.
We it all goes to them. And then at the end of the year, we slaughter 2 or 3 very large pigs, and everybody who works for me gets a very large box of pork.
That's how you bring home the bacon, right?
That's bringing home the bacon. I think that's why people work for me. At the end of the year, they get a lot of pork and a lot of beef.
Really?
And cheese every day.
So. Wow, that is fantastic. So the books, what are some of the main themes in the books themselves?
The latest one, Growing a Feast, is very much about the stories behind farms and the stories behind farmers. Mm-hmm. What I always want to say is that... I want people to know where that beautiful heirloom tomato came from, when that beautiful wheel of cheese and that beautiful or not so beautiful apple. Mm-hmm. That we need that connection. I mean, the people who are doing this are extremely passionate about it. They love what they're doing. They're very good at it. And I want you to know them. I want you to know why they're doing it. I want you to be connected to them. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to know them every day, over the winter, I went up and I met some people who have a grain farm way up in the far northeast corner of Washington State near the Canadian border. And Sam and Lucy have this grain farm, and they were beautiful, passionate, amazing people. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was just going for a tour, just, you know, over Thanksgiving. And now I can't go to my local store and buy crappy flour anymore.
Yeah.
I have to buy their flour because I want to be connected with them. I want them to succeed. I want the good product that they are passionate about. And it's once you know that story, you're connected to them. You don't waste it as much. And I think you're willing also to pay what it costs.
So does any of your cheese get down to San Diego at all? Or
It very rarely comes this far south. It'll go to San Francisco occasionally.
Yeah.
We'd like to change that.
Yeah, we'll get it down here.
So now how did Michelle ever find you? I mean,
well, through our through my goat farming friend, Jack, who I think you'll be hearing from later.
Wow.
he said, you've got to invite Kurt, you know?
Cheesemakers, there's not that many cheesemakers in the country.
Monty Python,
I mean, there's a lot. But.
Monty Python said, blessed are the cheesemakers.
Absolutely. They are the most blessed. Yeah. It's a fairly small community in this country of cheesemakers. It's growing. I think it was where wine was, you know, 25 years
ago. So how many kinds of cheese do you make, and what would you say is your signature cheese?
We make three kinds of cheese. The signature dish is Dinah's cheese. There's some just upstairs in this building today.
Uh-huh. What?
There's some. It's a bloomy rind cheese, like a Camembert style. It's called Dinah's cheese. It's very, very
good. Is it
like
a blue cheese for the
No, it's got white mold, like
brie. Camembert, you know,
like
good
brie.
Full fat cheese.
Like brie. Yeah.
Right. And it was judged last year by the American Cheese Society as the best Camembert made in America.
Fantastic.
Wow.
And it's really good. Yeah, it's quite good. And then we make a second one called Log House, which is a tome style. It's about 6 pounds. It's aged in a subterranean cave that we built under the pastures.
Oh, my gosh.
And then we have a queso fresco called Flores cheese.
That's
great. It's not a huge production, but it's high quality. I drive it around myself, you know, all around Seattle. It goes to Oregon, goes to New York.
That's outstanding.
That's good.
Well, folks, that's a little taste of what you're going to get for the rest of the show tonight. We've got two guests for every segment, but thank you so much, Kurt.
And my pleasure.
For coming down. Thank you, Michelle, for hosting at this wonderful 6-acre.
Hey, we're happy to have you
place.
Again. I hope you win another award.
I hope so. at the worst, we're going to eat and have some good food. But anyway, we're going to come right back with more of our show right after this from this very good night dinner. Hang on. Good night dinner, the fifth annual 2014 from the wonderful estate of Michelle Ciccarelli Lirac and Bill Lirac, the 6-acre palace overlooking the Pacific. It's just a splendid, magical evening as usual. Right, Richard?
It is so gorgeous, the view from this place.
And amongst this, all this indigenous
art. The view of the
art.
Beach.
Yes,
and
exactly.
We're sitting here with, you know, ancient art.
Yeah, it's just amazing, amazing. But anyway, we have two more guests from the dinner tonight. And the first one is Trish Watlington, and she's the owner of the Red Door Restaurant and Wine Bar and the Wellington Steak and Martini Lounge up there in Mission Hills. And welcome to the show, Trish.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Our absolute pleasure. Now, we're going to talk about ethical consumers in this segment a little bit. So do you want to address that a little bit, what it means to be an ethical consumer and diner, for that matter?
Well, and for us, it's twofold. Because we're consumers of products. We get product from Knoll and from other places, farms in the county. So we think about ourselves as ethical consumers, mm-hmm. but we also think about encouraging other folks to be ethical consumers. So we feel like it's our job to educate people about being ethical consumers, about what restaurants you choose to patronize, about mm-hmm. what farmers you choose to patronize, about where you get your food, about whether or not it's people are paid fairly and plants are raised properly, and we're looking at taking care of the earth.
Mm-hmm. So, obviously, you have a steakhouse, so I'm just curious where your steaks originate from, because everyone's always wants farm-raised and farm-to-table, so I don't know where the good cows are around here or how far they come from, so maybe you can tell us about that.
It's actually really complicated. San Diego County is not the easiest place to get beef, mm-hmm. One, because we have a water shortage, and so grass-fed beef is really difficult to come by here. In addition, we don't have a USDA processing plant, and the closest place that we can take cattle to be processed is Paso Robles. So that's one of the issues that we're actually working on.
That's
is trying
four,
to get
400 miles away.
Right. Yep. Trying to get a USDA plant here so mm-hmm. that it's more feasible to get beef from our local farmers. Mm-hmm. Right now, we get beef mostly from Meijer, and it's certified humanely raised, but it comes from farms in the Midwest and from Colorado because it's what we know is ethically treated.
And that's the grass-fed and all that, right?
And we're also working on a relationship with SunFed Ranch, which is up in the Bay Area, and their mm-hmm. beef is all grass-fed, and trying to get their product into our restaurants. But beef is complicated.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now you've got the Red Door and the steak, Wellington Steak and Martini Lounge. So how do those two differ, and what would the specialties be there at those respective places?
Well, the Red Door is a more family-friendly comfort food, and we're actually trying to move in the direction of smaller animals, pigs from Cook Pigs Ranch in mm-hmm. Julian, mm-hmm. Rabbits from Spur Valley Ranch, duck and chicken from Mary's Farm. So we're trying to move towards smaller, less environmentally damaging animals in mm-hmm. and more fish and more vegetables in our Red Door restaurant. And mm-hmm. then the Wellington is a steakhouse,
but also we have duck, we have other things on the menu, and the Wellington is a little more dark and swanky.
Have you noticed with this gluten-free? Now, I'm trying to go gluten-free. The weight isn't coming off as fast as I would like, but they say, you know, steak, you know, good fats and all that. Have you noticed an uptick in people interested in good beef and meats these days?
Absolutely. People want to know, are asking where their beef comes from. And mm-hmm. so they want to know, is it grass-fed? Is it organic? Is it hormone and antibiotic-free? And those mm-hmm. are all critically important things to us. We don't want to be feeding people hormones and antibiotics that are bad for them and bad for the environment.
I told a waiter the other day that I was gluten-free intolerant, but he didn't get my joke. But hey, Trish, what about
– we're gluten-free intolerant.
what about cost? People assume this is more expensive.
It is.
But when you look at the benefit, is it really?
In the long term, no, not at all.
Either. I agree.
But on the day-to-day, for us in terms of what we buy and how we can sell it, it is more expensive.
Yeah. Well, we have a farmer here also. We ought to talk with him. His name is Noel Staley. He's a farmer of Staley Farms Organics, Organic Farms, and owner of Staley Farms Market. And how you doing there, Noel?
Good. Thank you for having me.
You guys have been in the farming business a long time. When did it all start for your family?
So I'm a third generation farmer here in California. My grandfather started in Anaheim, and my dad bought him out and moved to San Diego County to Valley Center in the early 60s.
Yeah.
We just celebrated 50 years in San Diego.
My gosh.
Yeah.
How many acres do you guys have?
So we own 278 acres is the main farm. It's about 300 acres with what we own contiguous, there's managed properties, and my brother owns a few. He's my partner, and it probably ranges about 600 acres.
And what do you guys mostly raise?
Sometimes it's easier to say what we don't raise. We have citrus, avocados, blackberries, blueberries, strawberries, all kinds of vegetables.
Oh my gosh!
Dragon fruit and just, you know, chickens and.
So some of your product must be out here tonight,
right? I was counting before I raced up here. I think we're in 9 different spots on the menu.
Oh wow! 9 spots. You're supposed to hit double figures.
I didn't quite get there.
Hey, Noel, you've done some good charity work with a program called Farms to Schools, right? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. At a point, I actually almost gave up on it because I didn't think it was going to happen. The problem with when you're in your own business is that you're not being paid to be at a meeting. And we went to a lot of meetings. Mm-hmm. And finally, after years and years and years, San Diego Unified got a grant, hired a person, and Vanessa was her name, and she finally got farm produce into schools, and that's what it took. It took Gary Pytel at San Diego Unified, and then it took him hiring Vanessa.
Wow.
And about 3 years of meetings before anything actually happened.
I cannot believe there's fast food and junk food vending machines in schools.
And they're cleaning that up.
Yeah, they are, finally.
They're getting rid of the sodas, I hope, right?
Yeah, finally.
Has anyone seen the movie Fed Up? It's out, I guess it's about the sugars in the food. I haven't seen it yet, the documentary, but I plan to do so.
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, but I've been hearing good things. But anyway, you've got some stores in town too, don't you?
Yeah, we opened our first store in Marina Boulevard a year ago, last weekend, and that was to be a glorified farmer's market or glorified fruit stand, so to speak. And my brother called me and had this idea, and I said, "Well, I had that idea years ago, but I thought you'd think I was crazy, so I never said it." Mm-hmm. Now we have two. We opened a second one in South Park that's just a little tiny juice bar and fresh produce.
Nice.
Trying to get back to neighborhood stores, serving just the community that's there. We're not trying to drag people in from way out of bounds. We're not trying to be everything to everybody.
We need a good 7-day-a-week farmer's market.
Kind of tout ourselves as.
Yeah.
And now we're open to number 3 in September, hopefully September in Kensington.
Kensington.
Yeah.
Good. So, third-generation farmer, what are the big changes you've seen in the business over the last 2 or 3 decades?
Well, number one, water costs. Every year we're over the last 8 years, we're up about 12% a year.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's astronomical. And then labor. Labor is a huge issue. I don't care if we had a program to get labor here today, it wouldn't solve the problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Qualified labor is what we need. We don't need cheap labor. We don't need more labor. We need qualified labor.
Huh. How can we fix that, do you think? Just more education? I'm sure there's kids in schools who,
Are young kids interested in agriculture and farming?
Some. We get about 10 a year that come out and try out for the jobs.
Okay.
And one will last through the summer.
Huh. Well, it's hard work.
It is hard work. It is hard work. You know, but it's a fun. We try to make it fun too, especially when they're kids. You know?
Well, look, they have Archie's Acres. You know, they're veterans. You know, maybe that's something you could collaborate, get some veterans going on there, because it's great therapy for some of these guys. You know, coming back trying to transition back into society.
And they're doing a great thing. But our biggest problem is the lack of water. We just don't have an infrastructure to get water here. We got the largest lake in the world sitting off our coast right here. We're sitting right next to it looking at it, and yet we can't tap into it.
We can't efficiently desalinate. Someday they'll figure it out with solar power or some other source, because it does take a lot of energy, right?
Absolutely. It does take a lot of energy, but at the price of water now, we're up around $1,800 an acre foot. So an acre foot of water is one foot of water on the floor of a football stadium. Yeah.
But let's give your websites, because we're in the home stretch here. We have to wrap up in about 30 seconds.
Trish, how can people find you?
At thereddoorsd.com or thewellingtonsd.com.
Right. And Noel is Staley Farms Market. That's Stehly farmsmarket.com. But thanks so much for being our guest. Get out there. Enjoy yourself.
It's been our pleasure.
220 people and all the best chefs in town and food, and we'll have a ball. So anyway, we'll be right back for the second half of It's Your Money and Your Life right after this. So hang on.
Thank you.
Dinner at the Learack Estate, the beautiful Rancho La Jolla and La Jolla Farms. And now over to Richard to thank our sponsors.
Thank you to our sponsors, UBS on Prospect Street in La Jolla, right across the street, the best business bank in San Diego, Regents Bank. By the way, Chris Marsh from UBS is on page 16 of the San Diego Business Journal. I'm on page 17 this week. So that's a collector's item, folks.
Our favorite
CPAs on the planet, Pluto Epic CPAs up in Vista. Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics, the best CFO company here in town. Joel Gruskin with Cost Segregation Initiatives. Boy, have I been spending a lot of time with Joel, getting some big projects done to help real estate owners improve their cash flow. Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group. Carl and I have presented out in public. They actually let us out in public a couple of times recently to rather large crowds. It's been fun. So helping business owners improve the values of their businesses. Last but not least, Brenda Geiger, Geiger Law Offices, Estate Planning and Asset Protection Planning. Funny story, Joe. Brenda Geiger, Carl Sheeler, and I presented recently at a seminar where we were the three presenters, and our birthdays turned out to be June 1, June 2, and June 3. That's a 1 in 48 million odds.
How do you like that?
So go figure. But enough of that. Tell our listeners where they can find out more about our great sponsors, and let's keep talking about food and wine and good stuff.
You got it. Anyway, if you fire up your computer, your smartphone, or whatever you use to get online, and get over to iymoney.com and get your cursor over to the Sponsors tab, drop down on that, and you'll find all of their personal information, their history, their contact information, and they've all been working with Richard for many, many years with great success, correct?
Many, many years. But, Joe, we can't just talk about food. We have to drink things, too.
We do. Well, funny you should mention that, because we have two great vintners here, if I'm saying that right. But is that right? Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Anyway, we've got two more guests for this segment. It's all about wine and sustainability. And the first guest is Nick Palumbo. Or Nick, you go by Nicholas or Nick?
Either way.
Anyway, we'll say Nicholas because that's what I have on my page here. But Palumbo Family Vineyards, you're up in Temecula. Tell us about your vineyard and how long you've been in the business and what we need to know.
Well, you know, I've been in the business about 14 years now. I was born and raised in San Diego, went off to New York, studied culinary, and came back and found Temecula, and fell in love, actually. Initially, I was skeptical of the region, but I found that the more I looked into it, the more potential there was.
Well, there's a lot of wine coming from Temecula getting notoriety, correct?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. It's coming on strong lately, you know, for various reasons. It's become a really popular destination spot. But there's a handful of us out there that are really focused on growing quality, high-end grapes and wine.
Mm-hmm. And doesn't it take like a number of years before the right crop comes in for the right type of wine? And
you always hear it takes, you know, 3 years. You plant the grapes and 3 years later you get wine. But really in our case, we're doing high-end reds. So you're looking at 5-6 years maybe. I was lucky enough to run into an existing vineyard that was well planted, the right varieties in the right soils in the right spot.
Uh-huh.
And I just took it from there.
Wow.
But Nick, our previous guest, Noel Staley, mentioned that the cost of water has gone up about 8% a year or maybe 12% a year for ad infinitum. I know when you're growing grapes, you don't really have that sustainability issue with water as much, do you? It's a lot less usage, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually don't use a lot of water. In fact, a lot of the avocado groves, the citrus that was planted throughout Fallbrook and, you know, Deleuze on the west side, That's all being pushed out because of the cost of water. And, you know, wine grapes really do, if you're farming, again, if you're farming sustainably and you're going for quality, you're not using a lot of water.
Mm-hmm. So let's see here. Sustainability, that's a big factor. And so what are some of the more notable wines that you produce that people should know about?
Well, we've really built our reputation on our reds. We do make one white wine. It's a blend, and that's the wine that we're serving tonight at the dinner.
When you say red, is it Cabernet? Is it Merlot?
When I bought the property, there was Merlot planted and Cabernet Franc, which was really nice for the small little vineyard that we have. There's a lot of clay in the soil and really lent itself to those varieties. But since then, I have put in Sangiovese, Syrah, some of the other Rhone, Italian, Mediterranean varieties that I think are really nice for the area.
And of course, you have a tasting room if anybody wants to come up and sample and get a tour, and you explain how the wine is grown and produced. You do all that, right?
We do. You know, when you say that, though, we are sometimes considered the anti-Temecula in that our tasting room is 400 square feet. we're not a large place. We don't do the buses and limos and the large party atmosphere. Yeah. We're very focused on the wine.
Right.
Absolutely, we're open 11 to. Gosh, geez, I don't even know. Our focus isn't on that. But 11 to 5 daily is tasting, and we have very knowledgeable staff. If you want to talk wine and sip wine, that's where you go.
And how does the San Diego region compare now to Sonoma?
Interesting question. I don't ever really think in terms of that. You mentioned San Diego, Temecula. Yeah, obviously a big industry started up in San Diego again 100 years later. But we think about what's appropriate for our region. Of course I love Sonoma, but Sonoma is a huge area. You have very hot regions of Sonoma and very cool regions. So it's as varied as anywhere else.
So folks, get over to palumbowines.com and check it out. Maybe get up to Temecula and take a tour, and I'm sure Nick or his staff would love to show you around. So we have another guest, though, in the wine business as well here. We got to get to Phil Gregory, who's a winemaker from Mexico, I believe. He's the owner of a boutique Baja hotel called the La Villa de Valle. Mm-hmm. Well, we have that here, Villa de Valle, don't we? And the road. Anyway, he's got a restaurant there called the Corazon de Tierra, right? Yeah. De Tierra. And but it's called Vena Cava. He's an award-winning Baja wine served at the G20 Summit. Whoa, is that true?
Yes, it is. Wow. 3 years ago.
Welcome, Phil. G20, so.
Okay.
Now, Phil, you've been in Mexico how many years?
11 years.
11 years.
Yeah.
Now, your accent obviously isn't Spanish. Where are you from originally?
Manchester, England.
Really? Yeah. And how did you land in Mexico? This is cool.
Well, landing is the correct word. I did a lot of sailing when I was young. And one of the first long-distance trips I took ended up in Isla Mujeres down near Cancun.
You mean you sailed across the ocean?
Yes, I used to sail across the Atlantic quite a lot.
Oh, my gosh.
So are you a Man City fan or a Man United fan?
Man City, of course. Okay. Thank goodness right now. Yes.
So how does a guy from England wind up in Mexico and specializing in wine? This is quite a story.
Well, my expertise when I was younger was in drinking wine, not in making it.
Well, maybe you could teach me some of that, tonight.
It's good to have experience, Phil.
I'm English. That's the law. You have to drink wine and beer. But so. I was sailing a lot. I ended up living in Florida after a few years, moved to Los Angeles to help out a friend in business, and ended up living there for almost 20 years. But 11 years ago, found out about the Guadalupe Valley, went to have lunch there, really, from L.A., fell in love with the place the same day, and within 4 weeks, we'd gone back twice, found a property, and bought it.
Oh, my gosh. And did you know much about wine production before you even got into this?
No, not at all. But luckily, just a few minutes from my home, La Villa del Valle, the hotel, is a little place called the Escuelita, which is a winery where you can go to learn the basics. And I was very lucky. I also continued to make my wine there for several years as I lived very close by. And then I decided I needed my own winery. My friends, who were the owners of that place, the Escuelita, they lent me a building where I made my wine for 2 years. And then one of the brothers, Alejandro da Costa, the architect, he designed and built my present winery, which is on our own ranch.
And you had wine served at the G20 summit, which was, where was that held?
No. It was down in Cabo San Lucas, in Los Cabos,
wow,
when the then president, Felipe Calderon, was the host to President Obama and all the other heads of state.
Oh, my gosh.
And they served my Tempranillo, the red wine,
uh-huh,
one of my red wines,
uh-huh,
with the main course of their formal dinner.
Oh. And you use wells for water, correct? So you don't really have a water issue like we're sort of used to?
Well, our water issue is that we have almost none. We can only use what we find when we dig for water. Mm-hmm. But that, I believe, is all about to change. The Mexican state government in Baja has signed an agreement that they're going to treat some of the wastewater from Tijuana and send it down in what they call an aqueducto, a pipeline.
Yeah.
And we're going to be using that treated water for irrigation in the Guadalupe Valley.
Wow, outstanding. Anyway, we're coming up on our next break, though. But, Phil Gregory, thank you so much, folks.
Hey, we got to mention the website, though. Yeah, VanaCavaWine.com.
Vana, yes. VanaCavaWine.com. And, of course, Nick Palumbo, PalumboWines.com. So thanks for being our guest. And we're going to come right back with Green Acres and
Green
more.
Acres.
Right
thank
after
so
this.
Much.
Hang on. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we are back at a very good night dinner at the La Jolla Farms, the beautiful estate of Michelle Ciccarelli-Lirac for the fifth annual event here. It's fantastic, isn't it, Richard?
It is so gorgeous here, and I'm glad you didn't move that piece on the center of the table, because we could have gotten in a lot of trouble.
I mean, they've got, I don't know, dozens of chefs donating all, and people, wine and craft beer. And
just, art and books.
I mean, it's just...
it's beyond belief.
It is really something. I mean, if I would just go out there and graze on the grass with one of the cattle.
And the view is halfway decent.
We've got two more great guests. This segment's going to be about next generation of farmers and the future of agriculture. And we've got a real special guest down from Oakland. She's a senior editor at Mother Jones and the author of a book called Raise, What 4-H Teaches 7 Million Kids and How Its Lessons Could Change Food and Farming Forever. And that's pretty cool. And her name is Kira Butler. So, Kira, good evening. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Our pleasure. This is your first time at the Berry Dinner?
It sure is. And it's a pretty incredible event.
Is this magic or what? I mean,
it is.
I mean, you don't even have to eat. Just walk around and smell all the aroma. You don't need to even eat, and you're like,
I can't believe they don't let us eat while we're doing this.
Well, we'll get a few crumbs
just
later.
Torture.
On. Yeah. But anyway, so your book sounds pretty important, Kira. So what points would you like to make or discuss tonight about this?
Well, I followed five teenagers in Northern California. These are members of the 4-H Club as they raised their animals to take to the county fair. And I also looked at 4-H and its place in American agriculture, both historically and in the present and going forward. And I learned a lot about what kids are learning about farming these days.
Would you be more optimistic than pessimistic? Or what do you think?
Well, I would say most kids don't know a lot about farming. We know that. You know, we've done studies, mm-hmm, and we know that kids are not aware of where their food and their clothing are coming from.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, one study looked at a lot of kids and found that, you know, a lot of kids think that chocolate milk comes from brown cows.
Well, so logical.
Comes from mommy and daddy, doesn't it?
right. So, you know, there's a real need out there, I think, to teach kids about this stuff. And, you know, these are, you know, everybody eats food, everybody wears clothes. It would seem important to know where that stuff comes
but
from.
But now, San Diego County, we've got quite a few farms here. Aren't there I heard there's like, how many thousand farms?
There's not
7,000.
7,000, yes.
In San Diego?
Yes. That's what Andrew Spurgeon said last year.
Wow. We have the largest number of small farms of any county in the nation.
Okay.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing?
Okay. Amazing.
But, Kira, so when I go to these county fairs, I see a lot of kids, and there's some here at the event tonight, you know, raising livestock. And
are kids more interested in agriculture and farming, or is it because it's considered sort of an old-fashioned thing, or less kids interested?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think it depends where you go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're in an agricultural community, then the kids are more likely,
sure,
to be enrolled in 4-H Club, enrolled in Future Farmers of America, FFA. But if you go to the cities, then that's less likely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, 4-H does a whole lot of stuff with cities as well. But, you know, you're not going to be able to have the space and the means.
I mean, for example, in Oakland, are there programs in schools for kids about agriculture or farming?
In schools, I'm not sure. But there is a 4-H club in Oakland.
Okay.
Yeah,
I know, because 4-H was huge at my high school. I grew up out in the country, so it was huge.
Yeah, it is. It's huge in the country still.
Yeah.
Now, is the organization growing nationally, the 4-H clubs?
Yes, but it's much more than farming these days. You know, there's a big focus on science education, on nutrition, you know, healthy living.
Oh, that's good.
They've expanded, and I think in a way 4-H is really trying to get away from this kind of country bumpkin reputation that some people think that they have.
Wonderful. Now, do you also write columns in Mother Jones? And so you're a regular columnist and you appear there?
I do, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, folks, and motherjones.com, right? They could find you at
that's
that.
That's right.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's Kira Butler.
I love that periodical.
Oh, I'm so glad. That's so nice to hear.
It's a great. It's been
great.
Around for years,
yeah.
Right?
I mean,
yes.
It's,
yep.
It's an institution. Yeah. So Kira Butler, K-I-E-R-A, Butler. Get over there to Mother Jones and look for her columns and look for her book. And we've got another guest also, our final guest of tonight. He's an organic farmer in the U.S. and Mexico. He's been at it for 40 years. And he's a conservation official and an educator. And his name is Scott Murray. So, Scott, good evening. How are you?
I'm wonderful, and it's great to be here again with you folks.
You are a repeat guest from last year.
That's right.
So you must have done something right.
I was really honored to be a part of the show last year, and I wanted to touch base on what Kira said, because one of the keys right now is the concept of food literacy for our young people. We're kind of getting our literacy in a lot of ways from television and the media, and the hands-on experience of a 4-H'er, which another very important part of 4-H is leadership development, and that's one of the keys right now for the future. Who will be our leaders in the future?
Hmm.
The other part of it is I've been, as you said, in farming for 40 years, so I turned 60 last year. I'm the average age of an American farmer. For every American farmer that's 25 years old working, we have 5 that are working that are 75 years old.
Oh my gosh.
And that scares the living daylights out of me.
I was going to ask you about succession planning for the industry, or because I've heard that it's consolidating because of age and the fact that you need to have some volume and size to be able to be profitable.
Well, we kind of have two fundamental parts of the industry developing. One is what we call the conventional agriculture piece, which is large, or as Earl Butz back in the day of Nixon said, get big or get out.
Right.
And what we have now, though, is we've had a steady declining number. We're just below 2% of the American population feeds the nation. And now we've hit bottom and we're starting to come up, and it's the young people that Kira was looking into. And people who are switching careers. There's a program I teach college at San Diego City College. We have a program called Seeds at City, and it's a sustainable urban agriculture program. And it's exciting because we have a lot of young people, but also career-changing folks that have been in one career for a long time, and they're looking to get into another line of business. And the future of our food system is dependent upon people who bring their diverse knowledge to bear on this challenge that we have. As a conservation official, we're concerned about the fact that water is a critical piece. I mean, I sell water in fancy packages as a farmer. That's the deal. And water, our whole environment. You mentioned the cost of getting into agriculture. That's why the 75-year-olds are still into it, because their wealth is embedded in it.
Right.
And a young farmer has a hard time getting into it. So we're in a changing time in our culture where the future of our food system is dependent upon a lot of new people. We have a lot of immigrant farmers, organizations like the International Rescue Committee that helps resettling immigrants to use the experience they have from their homeland to be farmers in the United States. We have a garden here in San Diego where 28 cultures are working to learn to be small-scale commercial
where
farmers.
Where is that? That's in National City?
No, it's actually in the avenues of San Diego. It's the International Rescue Committee, the IRC.
Oh, sure, the IRC.
Right. I've heard
of
that.
They have also another farm in North County that they're developing for training.
And then City College has torn up some of the lawns there and put in organic farming, right?
We now have a little over an acre of organic farming that not only feeds some of the students and faculty through a CSA, but is also selling food to the food service system on the campus, and was the most popular program on campus last year.
Really?
And made some other departments a little angry.
Well, they get jealous of you, what the heck, so. But we are in the home stretch here, but we'd like to thank you very much. Scott, how can people get a hold of you? You have a website
We're available at edgeofurbanfarms.com.
Okay, perfect. And, of course, Kira at motherjones.com. And anyway, we'd like to thank all our guests, Nick Palumbo, Phil Gregory, Trish Watlington, Noel Staley, Kurt Timmermeister, Michelle Lirak, Chuck Lirak, of course, and get
eight
over to
guests. That's good.
Yeah, get over to iymoney.com. You can get the podcast and all that. But we're going to get out in the backyard now, Richard.
We got to thank Dave Sniff.
Dave Sniff, our programming genius.
Eric Rubalcaba back in the studio. Eric, thanks so much.
You got it. And let's thank Craig Blanker, our account executive. You folks have a great week. We're going to go out and kick back and enjoy the rest of the evening. So, and I hope you do the same. Good night. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank
now.
You. Yeah.